against the storm. We who believe in...
That's sweet. Honey in the Rock. And this is The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we are going to be speaking to David Kidd, who's the president of the Toronto Workers History Project. And they have a really an important event. It's going to be tomorrow, Tuesday, February the 17th at 6 p.m. on Zoom. And you can go to twhp.ca to attend. And it's going to be a really, I think, a powerful subject to be talking about. And I think David Kidd is with us now. Are you there, David?
Yes, thanks, Phil. Thanks for phoning.
It's really great to be talking to you. Your speaker, Benjamin Anderson, has tackled a really, you know, anybody knows Canadian labor history is heartbroken when they talk about the Canadian Seamen's Union, which was lasted from 1936 to 1950. Why was talking about that union and this event that you're going to have tomorrow at 6 o'clock?
Well, they were a historic union. They, you know, people talk about organizing precarity. Workers today, they did it back in the late 30s and in the middle of the war. They had 7,000 sailors organized on the Great Lakes by the end of the war.
7,000.
7,000. I mean, the Great Lakes was a busy ports of boats everywhere. And we were the third, Canada at that time was the third biggest merchant marine in the world. And the Canadian Seamen's Union organized all the sailors on the seagoing ships on both the Atlantic and the Pacific coasts.
But it is, and by the way, now, well, tell us, so this, your speaker is Benjamin Anderson, and I understand he's in Ireland, and I'll just tell listeners again, it's tomorrow, Tuesday, at 6 p.m., and you can, in order to attend this Zoom presentation, it's twhp.ca. You go there and you can join that meeting. So tell us about the speaker, Benjamin Anderson.
Yeah, Benjamin Anderson he spent a lot of time in Vancouver, British Columbia, and while there, he decided to go through the Simon Fraser University archives, where a lot of the Canadian Seamen Union material is. In the 1970s, a number of the old vets from the Canadian Seamen Union formed committees in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver and started going back and interviewing all the veterans. And a lot of that material has been kept in that archives. And there's been 8 different books produced out of that wealth of information, including one by Jim Green, which is great Against the Tide. And so Benjamin looked into this, and he's producing a review again of the history that was done, and it'll, I believe, will be appearing in a later issue of Labour Le Travail, which is the Canadian labour history journal. Mm-hmm. And so I just got in touch with him, and he's willing to speak tomorrow night and let us know the research he's been doing.
You know, people know it as a kind of, it's been dramatized a bit, the destruction, which was not anything benign. It was an actual state-led U.S. and Canadian governments agreed to destroy the Canadian Seamen's Union, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up with, you know, Hal Banks was the thug that they brought in to literally intimidate and smash the union. But again, so I was brought up to think that this was the evil man, but he was brought in by the Liberal Party, federal mm-hmm. government. He was brought in by the RCMP. He was brought in by the American Federation of Labor People. Mm-hmm. He was supported by all these other forces that still have extreme power today to smash this union because they were standing up for workers. Mm-hmm. They were the first newsletter that was bilingual. So they, you know, they were the first, one of the first unions too, because back then, often black workers were put in a separate section in the union, like the Brotherhood of Railway Employees, right? The Canadian Seamen Union put them right in, the same membership, the same, you know, collective agreement rights. So they were really a stalwart, and this is what, at the end of the war came, and the Canadian government just decided they want to get rid of the fleets, and they didn't want to have to deal with this union that stood up for its members who were working the boats at that time. And it was very dangerous work during World War II. Yes. A lot of them were sunk by Nazi submarines, and so a lot of them were literally killed or forced to you know, escape from the their ships being sunk, and they were never treated as they should have been, as literally as veterans of World War II.
Yeah. By the way, you also are going to be showing part of the presentation is going to be the documentary footage from put together and by Elaine Breer, right? And so you, people will actually be able to see some of the members of the veterans and with their stories.
She, listen, it's a tremendous film. It's a, you know, you could.
By the way, it's titled Betrayed.
Betrayed. Thank you. Thank you, Phil. And it's and that's exactly it. And you can get it at the Toronto Public Library. You can get it on Vimeo. But she went back and interviewed all these vets. And by the way, tomorrow night we're pleased to have a number of the children who, you know, the descendants of the vets. Some of them will be coming on tomorrow night as well to attend our session. And some of them, I'm hoping, will speak on their experience as children of the CSU members.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, I think Canadians who know about it and learn about it are very struck, impressed, and even proud that these unionists who had built a really great and progressive union, and by the way, the word progressive, they diverted that or turned it inside out and to tell people to stay away from it. And it had the ideas that you're talking about, racial inclusion, education of members, and fighting for real contracts as opposed to partner contracts with the industry and all that. I think it can be a boost. I'm really glad you're doing the work you do. And this is you're the president of Toronto Workers History Project. We really need more. There are more of these stories. And we can say the magic word, right? McCarthyism eviscerated the labor movement coast to coast. And I'm talking the whole blasted continent.
Yes. No, you're totally right. That was their demise. It was after the Igor Kazensko, revelations in Ottawa, where they used that excuse that he spied for the Soviet Union to come in then and smash unions that were associated with CP organizers, Communist Party organizers. And not all the members of the CSU but were communist members, but they also were proud of the Communist Party standing up for them.
Are they ashamed of having defeated the Nazis?
No, exactly.
Nazism stood for racism and oppression of racial people defined as racially inferior, and the Siemens Union and the Communist Party, of course, helped smash that. So why wouldn't they be proud of themselves?
Big time. A lot of them joined the Merchant Marines to actually go to war to fight the Nazis, and they, you know, because it was a crucial component of World War II, taking food to England and other parts of Europe in the fight against Nazism. Right? People needed also food, not just armaments. Though they also carried armaments to those distant shores as well.
Yeah. I'm very glad that I can say I knew a few of these. Met them over the years. I knew one, Joe Hensby, who shows up in a famous poem by Milton Acorn. But Hensby told me that when a new sailor would come aboard, they would give him their local, would give them a copy of Jack London's The Iron Heel and say, read this. Now that's leadership.
It is.
Who joins a union now or finds himself at a workplace in the, where the steward would come around and say, here's a copy of Jack London, you have to read this?
No, I really appreciate this, Phil. And you were totally right. It was a priority for them to have educational classes to teach, because a lot of the sailors at that point, it's like similar workers today, were illiterate, still, you know, facing other. And so the education they provided was not just for them to be able to do their job better, but to learn how to be better able to deal with society at large. And so The Iron Heel was read, other books were read, and also just being able to read their own collective agreement.
Yeah. You know that there's a parallel, too, with a great union that's still one of the healthiest on the continent, which is the longshoremen.
Yes.
And if you compare them, you think about the longshoremen in New York and Jersey. They went into gangsterism almost 100%, whereas the West Coast, under Harry Bridges and others, they actually survived McCarthyism, which is amazing.
No, it's true, and we have a tradition in Canada as well. At St. John's, the longshoremen there stopped during when Argentina was a fascist government. They stopped shipments of Canadian products to the Argentine government. And again, internationally, it's been the longshoremen who have not carried cargo to the Israeli defense forces that are killing people in Gaza as we speak.
Yeah, some years back, I recall, they said they would not handle cargo, military cargo, going to Israel.
Big time. And that is still going on across, you know, other ports across our world. And, of course, we don't get to hear news of that because, of course, a lot of people don't want to give that news. But I really appreciate, the longshoremen have still been so solid on that. And the CSU was always one to support other strikes. Like, at that time, there was a lot of organizing going on in the textile mills and the garment factories on both Spadina in Toronto and also in that area south of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And the CSU was famous for if there was a picket line of another group of workers, they would attend if they weren't out on shore, offshore.
Yeah. I think that I'm so glad you're putting this on it because this is the kind of story that will improve everybody's work in unions, hopefully, prayerfully, today, because there has been this disconnect. And you just pointed out that they CSU was connected. If there's another worker and trying to form a union or is on strike, you go there because that's a fellow worker up against a capitalist class. And that's what you do. That's your natural duty. You're not separate from them. And the CSU, its history is clean. It did. It fought till the end for the right things.
It did. That the final strike where just before they were smashed, they had solidarity actions in at least 20 to 25 ports across the world, right?
Yeah.
People in those other cities then did not touch any cargo that was brought in on CSU ships. Manship. So it's an amazing story, and you're fully right. We need for people. I mean, the history is just for something to reflect on today. It's not something
Absolutely.
That's, you know, with dust on it, and so we just sort of look at these old pictures. This is about, you know, so that we can reflect on things today, but it's also to remember so as never to forget.
And see if we can build it again, actually.
big time.
Yeah. And it's David Kidd. You are the president of a wonderful organization, the Toronto Workers' History Project. And there's a Twitter site, isn't there? It's at T-O, capital T-O, lowercase workers. And of course, to attend, our listeners, everybody pass the word, TWHP.ca, and it's tomorrow night, 6 p.m., and it's going to be a talk and a film, and that's, of course, I don't ever know the words for this, a Zoom conference. David Kidd, thank you very much. We look forward to talking about all your work in the future.
No, Phil, listen, really appreciate it, and thank you for your work. You always are highlighting important struggles that are going on, and I really, really, I personally appreciate it, but I know I'm not alone.
Well, thanks again, and we're going to watch this closely. Thank you.
Take care, Phil.
Okay.
Bye.
This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think we have a little appropriate music. Pedro knows. Coming up.